The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Hour 2 of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB. Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the second hour on this Sunday night. The fourth day of January, our engineer Brian Graves is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the bronze medal winning snowboarder from the Paralympic Games in Sochi last year, Amy Purdy. She has a brand new book out called On My Own Two Feet that we will be discussing in the second half. We'll talk to the great Southside Johnny Lyon of the Asbury Jukes, and we'll be talking about their upcoming gig at B.B. King's in Manhattan, the Yankees, the Boss, and so many other things. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday evening. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, most cleverly titled Sports Talk 1240, where you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look, and then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240, and all past shows can be heard on our website at sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest is the top-ranked adaptive snowboarder in the United States, a three-time World Cup Paris snowboard gold medalist, the 2014 Paralympic bronze medalist, and the founder of Adaptive Action Sports, which is a nonprofit organization that helps youth adults, and wounded veterans with physical disabilities get involved with action sports. She's a professional motivational speaker, an actress, a model, and as we know, a dancer, a clothing designer, a product spokesperson, and as we know, the breakout star and finalist of season 18 of Dancing with the Stars. And I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Amy Purdy. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
It's great to have you with us. Now, growing up in Las Vegas, who were your role models, your early influence, any athletes?
You know, I feel bad. I feel like the worst athlete because when I actually didn't even consider myself an athlete, believe it or not, until about 2 years ago.
Okay.
I grew up skiing and snowboarding, even though I'm from Vegas. But at that time, snowboarding wasn't in the Olympics, and that's really what I did. So I really didn't grow up looking at athletes as role models for myself. It wasn't until I was much older, in my 20s, that snowboarding was now in the Olympic Games, and it wasn't until about 2 years ago that I started dedicating myself to the sport and that I feel like I became an athlete myself.
Okay. Now, by the way, how was your book signing today at Bookends in Jersey?
It was great. It was great. It was the first one I've done, and it was really sweet. I actually it's kind of a small Ma and Pa bookshop. It's amazing. And when I first walked in, there was maybe five people in this area, and I thought, aw, you know, so I had five people show up. And and then after that, and I was talking to these people for quite a while, and I thought, well, that, you know, it was so nice that they came out. And then I got shuffled to this other area where there are stairs that went downstairs.
Right.
And that place was packed, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
See. Yeah, I've been out there to Bookends. Yeah, and that's what you're going to find at Book Review, eh? Amy's going to be at Book Review, folks, in Huntington Village Wednesday, the 7th at 7 p.m. And Book Review is an independent bookstore, Amy, in Huntington out here on Long Island. And it's been around for years. Bill Clinton's been, in fact, Bill Clinton claims that's his favorite bookstore in the United States.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, so hopefully you'll enjoy it out at Bookends. And they usually draw great crowds out there, so hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Great.
Now, you have a great story to tell. What was your goal in writing this book?
You know, I wanted to get the whole story out there. Mm-hmm. When I lost my legs, and I lost my legs from bacterial meningitis and barely survived that, I remember right away thinking, you know, when I do survive this and when I do figure things out, I want to help other people. And so right off the bat, I knew that I wanted to write my story. I wanted to write a book. But I also felt like I wanted to live more life. And I can say that I have. I've done so much in the last, gosh, I would say it's been about 14 years. And then with Dancing with the Stars, and, you know, so much of the public know me now from Dancing with the Stars, but don't really know the journey that it took to get there and all of the challenges and all of the failures and all of the accomplishments, just that whole journey to get there. And I hope to inspire people, I mean, to, you know, look at the challenges in their lives as stepping stones. And I just hope that my story is able to assist in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the great stories you tell, I got my book this week, and I was able to page through it. The story, Amy was a massage therapist before she became ill, and she continued that afterwards. The story where you met the man, you were finished work one day. They called you back to do one more massage, and it was a gentleman. And a special gentleman, and tell that story to the folks.
Yeah, it's so amazing. It's always when you don't want to do something that you're always so grateful that you did. And that was the case in this situation. I had worked a really long day. It was really hot in Vegas. I was ready to go out with my friends and looking forward to that, and got to the garage, and my manager called and said, oh, my gosh, we have somebody who's been sitting here for quite a while. We've somehow forgotten about him. Can you come back and massage him? And I just thought, oh, I don't really want to do this. But, right, of course, I didn't want him to wait any longer. So I headed back, and right away when I met him, I was so grateful that I came back for such a nice man. He was this older guy, and he had such kind eyes, and he had wrinkles, and it just looked like he had really lived a lot of life. And as I was massaging him, we got into a pretty deep conversation about life. And at one point he said to me, you know, you're really intuitive, I can tell. And he said, Amy, have you crossed over yet? And I said, and it kind of, you know, took me by surprise. But in a way, I kind of knew what he was talking about. I had this feeling, since I was in high school, that something was going to happen in my life. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if it was good or bad, but it was this kind of feeling in my gut that something is going to happen that is somehow, I don't know, going to set me apart, or I'm not sure how to explain it. But so when this man said, have you crossed over yet? I thought, no, but I think I know what you're talking about. And then he told me the story about how he fell down a well when he was a kid, and he drowned, and he actually died. His heart stopped. And when he came back, he lived his life completely differently. He felt like everything looked different. He lived his life on a different kind of vibration or level. And he said, Amy, I feel like this is going to happen to you, and when it does happen, don't be scared. And I ended up having tears streaming down my face and hugged the man after I worked on him. And instead of going out with my friends that night, I drove home and just thought about this conversation. I ended up writing it down in my journal, and it was about a month later that I was in an emergency room fighting for my life, you know, being told I was in cardiac arrest, and I was given maybe 2 hours left to live. And I remember thinking, no, this man said I was going to live an amazing life, and when this happens to me, don't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't know exactly what it all meant, but I knew in that moment I hung on to his words.
Yeah. So that, yeah, and that did have a profound effect on you. And from there on in, it sort of changed your life.
It has, absolutely. I mean, that was the beginning of this journey. And I ended up getting bacterial meningitis. That's what happened. I felt like I had the flu one day. I was actually at work doing massage and started to feel a little bit run down. But within 24 hours, I was in the hospital. I was on life support. I was given less than a 2% chance of living. What felt like the flu progressed really quickly. And I ended up fighting for my life and losing both of my legs below the knees to septic shock. And that's when your body pulls blood from your extremities to save your organs. And I ended up going on to have a kidney transplant. But at the time, I had multiple organ failure. And I mean, my life changed forever at that point.
And now you set goals for yourself after you did recover from this.
I did. Well, I set goals for myself actually right when everything was pretty intense, because I felt like I needed something to grab onto. I think I felt like I needed control somehow when my life was completely out of control. And as I was being wheeled into the operating room, I was so scared. I remember thinking, I couldn't even wrap my head around the idea that I'm about ready to lose both my legs. So I made these three goals, and the first one was that I wasn't going to feel sorry for myself. Everybody had felt sorry for me. You know, you could tell just from the looks on their faces when they walked in the room, and my family just was heartbroken knowing that I was losing my legs, and I just did not want I didn't want to take that on. So I wasn't going to feel sorry for myself. And the second thing was that when I figured this out, I was somehow going to help other people. And the third thing was that I was going to snowboard that year. And I had never missed a season of snowboarding since I started, and I wasn't about to, whether I lost my legs or not. So
yeah.
I held on to those three goals, and I'm proud to say that I've gone on and accomplished all those.
You did, and you did snowboard 7 months later.
I did. I still was about, under 90 pounds. I was so sick when I left the hospital and no legs. I had tubes sticking out of me because I was in kidney failure and had to relearn to walk again in these very uncomfortable metal legs. And it was getting towards the end of the ski season, and I thought, well, this is my chance to go up there and see if I can do this. And so I did. I went up to our local ski resort, which is actually right outside of Vegas, and I went up with some friends and my sister. And the whole time I had thought, I know this is possible, I just have to figure out a way to do it. But once I was on the chairlift, that was the first time that I actually thought, well, what if I can't do this? What if I really can't do this? And all the doctors and my prosthetist who makes my legs had told me at that point, we have no idea if you'll be able to snowboard again. We don't even know how comfortably you'll walk again or if you'll walk without a cane. And I got up to the top of the run and kind of got off the chairlift okay. But then as I was starting to move down the run, I started to realize that it felt completely different than I ever could have imagined. My ankles didn't bend. My knees didn't bend. I couldn't feel my feet. I mean, where my actual body ends and the snow begins is about a foot away from each other. And at one point, I kind of hit this bump and twisted, and my goggles went one way and my gloves went the other way, and my legs still attached to my snowboard went flying down the mountain. And
wow.
I was, you know, so discouraged. And my friend had to hike down and pick my legs up and, you know, attach to my snowboard and hike them up the mountain. And I thought, you know, this can either completely stop me right now and I just walk away and say I can't do it, or this is going to force me to figure out a way to do it.
And or it's only the beginning, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it did. It forced me to get creative.
Mm-hmm. Great way to look at it. Well, talking to Amy Purdy tonight. Her book is called On My Own Two Feet. She'll be at book review on Wednesday night at 7. When you saw the prosthetics for the first time, you learned to walk again, but you accomplished the goal that you wanted to. You were the maid of honor at your sister's wedding in 99.
Yeah. Once again, I needed some kind of goal,
right?
You know, just to drive me and help me move forward, because my legs were so uncomfortable. And to think of putting them on, it's much easier to sit in a wheelchair than it is to put these really, like, chunky, uncomfortable legs on, strap these on, and, you know, walk uncomfortably. But my sister was getting married, and once again, I was really just didn't want people feeling sorry for me. I didn't want to be wheeled down the aisle in a wheelchair, and I also didn't want to take the attention away from her. And so I decided I was going to walk in her wedding, and I think this was about maybe a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks at the most after I got my legs for the first time. So I'd say the first week I battled with just even putting my legs on, and then the second week I decided to work with a physical therapist, and I told them what my goal was, and I ended up walking down the aisle. I surprised her right as I was going out. I was supposed to be wheeled out down the aisle. I surprised her, and I said, I'm going to walk down the aisle, and so I did, and I walked down. I had my cousin on one arm and a friend on the other arm, and it was, you know, it was really, I think, accomplishing for me, because I thought, well, if I can do this, and I just did this in a week and a half, you know, a week and a half ago, it seemed nearly impossible, and now I'm here, and I did it. What else can I do?
Right. What a special day for everybody.
Right.
Definitely.
And I ended up, unfortunately, taking all the attention because people weren't expecting me to just walk down the aisle. So everybody was crying, but it was pretty amazing.
Now, what about this? Shifting gears totally now, Amy. What about the Madonna video and the Nikki Sixx video? That's what I want to know about. Let's talk about that. Being part of the Motley Crue.
I know. That's awesome. I know. I grew up listening to Motley Crue, so yeah. It was such a cool experience. But yeah, so the Madonna thing, that came right before the Nikki Sixx thing did. But I at one point started flipping through. I love fashion magazines, and I remember flipping through the magazine and thinking, gosh, it would be so cool to see somebody, see a model or see an actor, and later on maybe find out that they have prosthetic legs or something that's different about them. And I guess maybe I started putting that energy out there. I you know, wanted to work with different artists and stuff and see what was possible with these legs, because they really are, they're kind of like accessories. You can do all types of things with these legs, and I started to see that. And randomly I got a phone call from Madonna's manager. So she was doing a music video, and it was called American Life was the name of the song, and she was looking for a double leg amputee runway model. And I wasn't a runway model at the time, but I think I had done some photo shoots and different things. And anyways, ended up finding me and getting in touch with me, and I flew out to LA and did this big music video with her, and I was a runway model. And but it was pretty funny, because it started out, the girls in the wardrobe didn't know what to do with me. They covered me up in this long dress and just kind of shuffled me out on this runway where Madonna was sitting on the edge of the runway. And I walked out there, and they turned on the music, and as I was walking out, I was thinking, I know they hired me because of my legs, but here I'm all covered up. So when I got to the end of the runway, I threw my dress up and did this dance and turned around and strutted off, and Madonna yelled cut and ran backstage, and we had a pretty awesome conversation. She said, oh my gosh, you're beautiful, do you mind if I sex you up? And I was like, well, you're Madonna, you can do whatever you want with me. So we changed my clothes, you know, my hair was wild, my makeup was wild, I was kind of lathered down in oil and sparkles, and turned into this whole different character, and ended up strutting the catwalk and spending the rest of the day with her. So
nice.
It was a pretty empowering moment for me,
yeah.
You know, to be able to always have this feeling that, you know, these legs are kind of cool. I mean, there's something different about this, and there's something that can be done here, but it takes a forward-thinking artist to maybe see what it is. And so, you know, leave it to Madonna to be the one to do that. But then, Nikki Sixx, I was contacted by him a couple years later for a project he was doing. And he has a book, which is a New York Times bestsellers book, called This Is Going to Hurt. And he was just, he's gone from being an incredible musician and incredible writer. It's a brilliant book, by the way, to also being an amazing photographer. And he had this vision of a girl, but it started with a girl with one prosthetic leg, that he wanted this leg to be made to look like a steel ice pick. And I remember kind of convincing him that two prosthetic legs was better than one. I was like, because then I can be equal. And anyways, we ended up creating this amazing character together and doing this brilliant photo shoot and video. And there was a whole kind of project around it. But ended up being the spread photo of his book. And he's incredible. He's so supportive.
Excellent. Now, everybody wants to know about Dancing with the Stars. Now, I'm probably the only host in the country, probably in the world, Amy, that's had two Dancing with the Stars competitors on their show in the consecutive weeks.
Really?
Last week I had, I don't know if you know Meta World Peace. Do you know Meta?
You know, I don't.
Okay. He was on season 13.
Okay.
He was unfortunately let go first, so he wasn't exactly your caliber. But he won a championship with Phil Jackson's Lakers. He played with Kobe Bryant and those guys. He's a basketball player.
Right.
And had him on my show last week, and now I have you on this week. So there we go. Two Dancing with the Stars competitors on two consecutive weeks. But everybody, as you say, everybody came to know you through Dancing with the Stars if they were not alive during Sochi 2014.
Right.
Do you still keep in touch with Derek and all the competitors that you were on with during Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely create a bond with everybody. You know, even if you're not together that much, with Derek, we were together 7 days a week, 6 hours a day for 3 months straight. So you're pretty much glued at the hip. And everybody else, you know, we'd pop our heads into their rehearsal studios and see them throughout the day. But, you know, we were all so supportive of each other because we're all in different situations, you know. For me, obviously with my legs, I was kind of in my own world in a way. I couldn't compare myself to anybody else. I really didn't feel competitive to anybody else either, just because I didn't know, you know, from week to week how I would do and if I would be able to outdo anybody else. And so anyways, we ended up becoming quite good friends as far as I'm friends with most of the cast. And Derek and I, we keep in touch when we can. I mean, it's so interesting because you go from being glued together to the show ending and kind of just, that's it, you move on and, you know, go on with the rest of your life. So we definitely try to keep in touch when we can, though.
Great, yeah. And tell us a little bit about Adaptive Action Sports, Amy.
So Adaptive Action Sports is a nonprofit organization that I co-founded with my boyfriend, Daniel. We've been together at this point for, gosh, I'd say about 13 years. But we started the organization in 2005, and we started it because at the time that I lost my legs, there were zero resources for somebody like myself, somebody who had a physical challenge and who wanted to get involved in action sports like snowboarding, skateboarding, wakeboarding. But there was a lot of organizations in the country that supported people who did classic sports, so skiing or running and swimming. But those really weren't the sports that I related to. So we started the organization to help create those resources and to also help get snowboarding into the Paralympic Games. And we were able to do that. We were a huge part in helping to get it into the games for 2014. And we currently have a handful of wounded vets who are living with us up in Copper Mountain, Colorado, That's up in the Rocky Mountains there, and we're training them so that they can hopefully make the U.S. snowboard team and then the 2018 Paralympic team as well.
Excellent. Now, your role model, the book mentions, is Oprah. How did you enjoy going on the tour with Oprah Winfrey?
It was amazing. It was honestly just so surreal. I think, you know, after Dancing with the Stars, I thought, okay, what's next?
And
I ended up right away doing the ESPN body issue. And
right.
Then I think it was just a few days after doing that, I found out that I was invited to do this tour with Oprah. And, I mean, it was absolutely incredible. I looked up to her in my roughest days. You know, I'd look up to her and the guests that she had on the show for hope and inspiration. And to then be on stage with her in front of, you know, 16,000 people sharing my story and my inspiration, it was amazing. It was so surreal, and I feel incredibly blessed. And I was actually able to do that, the speaking tour, through my sponsor, Toyota. So Toyota has been a huge support over the last couple years, and I've had a long relationship with them, and they actually were the title sponsor for the Life You Want tour with Oprah. And so I can really give them the credit for getting me involved with it, but it was absolutely amazing.
Wonderful. Well, Amy, it's been great talking about your journey, your life and your career. We thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to talk with us.
Absolutely.
The book is titled On My Own Two Feet, From Losing My Legs to Learning the Dance of My Life. Once again, Amy is at Book Review in Huntington this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Amy Purdy, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Take care. Well, up next, we go down the Jersey Shore, folks, with Southside Johnny. Stay with us.
WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, New York, Long Island, New York, New York, Long Island. Bill Donahue with you on this January 4th, Sunday evening.
When I get home from my job, I turn on my TV, but I can't.
Well, Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes first achieved prominence in the mid-1970s, emerging from the same Jersey Shore music scene as the now legendary contemporary and pal, Bruce Springsteen. Their first three albums were produced by Stephen Van Zandt. The Jukes are currently touring. They're also recording brand new tracks for their next full-length studio CD, shooting for a 2015 release. They'll be appearing this Friday, January 9th at B.B. King's in Manhattan, and Saturday, January 10th at the Ridgefield Playhouse in Ridgefield, Connecticut. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Southside Johnny Lyon. John, good evening.
I told you, and I've told you before.
What is it?
Never call me before 9 or after 9.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's a small window of opportunity. And you broke it.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's okay. For you, I'll do it.
All right.
It.
How's things tonight, John?
Everything's good except it's raining like a pig. And it's been bad weather for the last 5 or 6 days. So I'm going to Costa Rica in a little while and just sit in the sun and think about other things.
Attaboy. All right. Well, when you were growing up, you remember that?
No, not now. It's after 9.
All right, yeah. Okay.
Yes, I do remember growing up. Go ahead.
Who were your favorites? Who were your influences musically?
Big Joe Turner, Ray Charles, Winoni Harris, Billie Holiday, John Lee Hooker, Lou Walter, Elmore James, Muddy Waters. Do you want me to keep going? Because I've got about 1,000 names.
Nice, yeah. Oh, those are some good ones. Yeah, some real good ones. Now, let's talk about Miami Steve, a little Steven there. What was his influence on the formation of the Jukes?
Well, Steven was playing with, he was working on the Turnpike back then. And he would come in and he didn't have a place to stay. So my first wife and I said, stay with us in this little house on Route 36, I think it is. It was 33 Corliss Avenue. And he would come in and his hands would be like crippled from this jackhammer that he was using. I'm not kidding. He would be black in the face with tar and his hands would be like curled over from the jackhammer. He said, Stevie, you're a great guitar player, amongst other things. So he finally quit and went off with the Dovells and played a lot of oldie shows. And when we started the Jukes, I took over a band called the Blackberry Blues Band. I brought in Kevin Cavanaugh, and eventually Steven said, let's try this music, let's try that music. So he was an integral part of that. We were just finding our way at that point. And he and I collaborated on trying to figure out a way to combine rock and roll and rhythm and blues and blues and all the different musics we liked.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the E Streeters have recorded or played with the Jukes, correct?
That is correct. They all owe me a lot of money.
Yeah. Like the great big man, Clarence Clemons.
Yes, he's played with the Jukes a number of times. He had a band in Down Deck. He used to play with us at a double bill, and you would come out and play with us, and we would go out and play with him. And Gary Talon, of course, I've been friends since high school, and even Bruce was a rhythm guitar player in one of Stephen and I bands way back in the 60s.
We're speaking of Southside John Lyon tonight. Now, even the Miami Horns have toured or recorded with Bruce, too, correct?
Yes, and actually one of my guys is out with Diana Ross. The whole horn section went out with Diana Ross. A couple of my one of my guys played with David Bowie. Oh, geez, there's so many different people they played with. Natalie Merchant. You know, it's really a kind of a proving ground for people, and they get picked to go to do other things, which I'm fine with. I mean, I'm glad to see people go out and make something of themselves, make a name after themselves.
Definitely. Now, I was interested to read John Bon Jovi called You, his reason for singing. Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, that John's a very nice person. He's been a great supporter over the years. But he wanted to be a singer from very early on. And I got to help him a little bit in the beginning with a demo, but it didn't go anywhere. And then he made it himself. I mean, he is a self-made man. And God bless him for it. He's a great, energetic, great performer, and he's made it on his own.
Nothing from you.
No, he didn't get anything from me. Other than bad habits.
All right, yeah. Now, let's be honest anyway. Now the first three albums, I Don't Want to Go Home, This Time It's For Real, and Hearts of Stone, Stephen produced those.
Right.
Right.
And at the last one, we knew he was going to go with, I mean, I knew he was going to go with Bruce, because Bruce needs somebody on the road he could trust. So we went through, like, the tortures of the damned to make that Hearts of Stone record. We threw out a bunch of songs, which later became his album with the Disciples of Soul, Men Without Women. But the record company shut us down, and we were in this little cramped studio and one speaker instead of stereo, and it was a rough time, but you know, you get through those things, it makes you stronger.
Yes. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, okay. Now, your appearance on SCTV, what do you remember about that?
Only that was John Candy took me. We were there, and it was in Calgary or something like that, and the sun didn't go down. It was nobody got any sleep. And so the next morning, when it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, and we're meeting with the people, Andrea and all those people, great people, fabulous people.
Yeah.
And John Candy comes walking, and he goes, "You're Southside Johnny." And I'm like, "Yeah." And he put his arm around me and took me to the bar next door. It's 9:30 in the morning. And we're drinking martinis at the bar. So John was a larger-than-life person. I wish he was still here.
Yeah, he's missed. He definitely is. It's great when you're sitting down on a Saturday afternoon or any time between 9 and 9, and a John Candy movie pops up on the TV, because he was a good one.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He was full of love, and, you know, he didn't take things seriously. He took his job seriously, but he really was just a force of nature. And he's like Bruce and Steven that way. When you're in their orbit, you just kind of go, okay, whatever happens is okay.
Now the Jukes have always kind of been in the shadow of Springsteen, John. Now, you consider that a blessing or a curse?
I think it's a blessing, personally. I mean, we wouldn't have a career without Bruce's breaking through, but I don't have to put up with the scrutiny that he has. I mean, I can walk the streets, and although Bruce is good at that too, he has a way of just doing the things he wants, and people leave him alone. John too, but for me, if I want to go shopping or pick up my mail or just walk around, nobody really bothers me, and I really love that. I don't ever want to be a big star that people harass and paparazzi and all that stuff. I mean, I'd be in jail for murder if that happened.
You can walk the streets, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't mean that way. I mean, although, you know.
Now, on the film Eddie and the Cruisers, you were a technical advisor.
Yeah, I ran the sound, and I taught people how to clap one time, and brought in my own instruments so that they were vintage instruments, and pretty much just kind of enjoyed the process of watching how a film was made.
And what'd you think?
What a stupid way to make a living.
Yeah.
It's so boring. I mean, you sit around for hours and hours, and finally you say, action, and you go literally a minute, maybe a minute and a half, maybe 30 seconds. Cut. And then they refocus everything, and you go, God, this is boring.
Yeah, all to make a movie.
All to make a movie.
Yeah. Oh, well. Now the live albums. You've done a few live albums. Which do you prefer?
Well, I like the last one we did, Men Without Women, which is Stephen's album. We did it at Stone Pony a couple of years ago, and we had like 8 horns or 7 horns, and Stephen came out, and it was just a great night, and it was well captured by the people who recorded it, and I had nothing to do with that, so. I mean, it really came out great. It was a good album.
Now, who are you carrying in the band now? Let's give a shout-out to the guys.
How will I know? They're behind me.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows?
I don't know their name. Whoever shows up. Now, we have Jeff Gazzio on the keyboards, who's my songwriting partner.
The guy on the
beat. The great John Conte, one of the best bass players in the world. Tommy the Goose Sagusa on drums, terrific. Glenn Alexander on guitar. And we have Chris Anderson, the dude Neil Pauly, and John Isley. But we have had a number of other people show up and play too. So, you know, it's one of those things where I look around and go, who's that guy? So, you know, but the band is so good now. And everything is right where it should be, that it doesn't matter who shows up. The show is just, you know, whatever I want it to be, which is great.
Do you still enjoy the touring?
I love playing. I mean, we've had great shows in the last. New Year's Eve was spectacular, and the shows before it were good, too. So everything is good.
Outstanding. So you're coming up in B.B. King's, and
which is one of our favorite places to play, because a lot of people come from out of town. They're bussed in, you know, people who are on tour to come to New York, and that's part of the package. And they see us, and they think, oh, it's going to be a band. And all of a sudden, we blast on stage, and they go, oh, that's a little different, which is nice.
No, it's different. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's going on out there. Why should anybody else?
Now, I just wanted to ask you about doing that cover of Billy Joel's "You May Be Right" that you did back in for the sitcom. What was it, Dave's World?
Yeah, Dave World, Dave Barry, Dave's World, Dave Barry. It was just one of those things where I got a phone call and the guy said, "I will fly you out. You sing it." It took me about 20 minutes, and they put me up at a nice hotel. Al Anderson from NRBQ was there, and we sat around and talked, and I went and jammed with Skunk Baxter at the Ina Club, and for me, it was just a big vacation, and I got paid for it.
How's it working with Jeff Baxter?
He's crazy.
Yeah. Now, there's a guy.
Skunk, what do you expect?
There's
a
guy. Yeah, there's a guy who's played with everybody.
Yeah, he's played with everybody, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
He knows how to get things done. He's a terrific guy. He should be doing more.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Yes, he is.
Like yourself.
No, I'm a myth.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And now I hear you're a Yankee fan.
Yes, I am. Well, I have been since Mickey Mantle days.
Now,
I used to watch the games on this little black and white TV, and Mickey Mantle would hit these moonshots, and we would go, that's never coming down. And we would laugh. And the Yankees to me are part of my youth, and I love them for that.
Now, did you go to the old stadium?
Yes, I went to the old stadium a bunch of times. Yeah, I have not been to the new stadium yet.
Yeah, no, neither have I. I'm a Mets fan, so I'm in no hurry to
get
there.
Well, I went to the Mets stadium, yeah. City, whatever it's called. It was great.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice place. Yeah.
And great. We had great seats, and it's a great experience.
Yeah, it's a nice place. But, yeah, Mantle was special. I've seen him at the old Yankee Stadium. I guess like you, I can't wait for spring training to come back around every year.
No, that's what saves me. And in the depths of winter, you know, you really get depressed and there's no sun, and bleak, and the wind is blowing, and it's cold. And all of a sudden, spring training starts, and you start to feel as though it's, you know, something is growing. And, you know, summer is coming.
It's like Rogers Hornsby said, John, what do I do during wintertime? I sit at the winter and wait for spring to come around.
That's right. And yeah. When spring training, when you hear first turn on the radio and you hear about spring training, you go, oh, life is worth living once again.
Yeah. No good these days.
No.
Well, that's the scoop. So Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes will be at B.B. King's on the Deuce. You ever call it the Deuce, John?
No.
No?
42nd Street. Come on.
42nd Street. That's what they used to...
Gaudy. Gaudry, 42nd Street.
That's what they used to call it. Between 7th and 8th was the Deuce.
Yeah, well, that's before my time. That may be your time. I'm just a young man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. I forgot. Yeah, that's 42nd Street. B.B. King's next Friday, this Friday coming up, January 9th, also January 10th in Connecticut, the Ridgefield Playhouse in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Well, John, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
No worries. Go see Southside Johnny this weekend with the Miami Horns. And it's been a real pleasure, John.
All right. I guess I'll have to shave next week.
Yeah. Do that. You do that. And do it between 9 and 9.
Good night.
Take care, John. Southside Johnny, folks. Thanks, John. Well, now I'd like to give you folks a little insight on what's coming up this Tuesday. This Tuesday will be the Hall of Fame balloting. And I went on ESPN Baseball Tonight, their Facebook page, and they gave me a little insight on how their balloting will look. Several players up for grabs for the Hall of Fame this year. Of course, some players got 100% of their voting. Most notably, Randy Johnson, the big unit, with 100% of the vote getting. Also, Pedro Martinez with 100% of the vote getting. Also garnering ballots, garnering votes, Tim Raines. Outfielder Tim Raines. Pitcher John Smoltz. Craig Biggio, and Mike Piazza. So if the Hall of Fame balloting were just done by ESPN voters, you'd have Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Tim Raines, John Smoltz, Craig Biggio, and Mike Piazza joining the ranks of Hall of Famers and entering the hallowed portals of Cooperstown. Those not gathering enough votes would be Jeff Bagwell, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, Edgar Martinez, Jeff Kent, Lee Smith, Alan Trammell, Fred McGriff, Mike Messina, and Mark McGwire, in that order of descending votes. Those receiving zero votes was Rich Aurelia, and most of these guys should not receive any votes. Some should. Some are worthy. Rich Aurelia, Aaron Boone, Tony Clark, Carlos Delgado, who had very good numbers, Jermaine Dye, Darren Erstadt, Cliff Floyd, Nomar Garcia-Para, Brian Giles, Tom Gordon, Eddie Guardado, Don Mattingly, Troy Percival, Jason Schmidt, Gary Sheffield, who had very good numbers, Sammy Sosa, who was a key steroid abuser, and Larry Walker. So right there you have it, folks. Tuesday the Hall of Fame vote will be announced. Definitely, I believe Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez will go in the Hall of Fame. Probably John Smoltz as well. Unfortunately, I still think the specter of steroid use hangs over the head of Mike Piazza, although there is really no evidence to prove that he did steroids. I believe that that specter still hangs over his head. Biggio may get elected this time out, but definitely Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez will probably gain election to Cooperstown. Another item in the sports news is the death of ESPN sportscaster Stuart Scott, who passed away at age 49. Longtime anchor at ESPN, he died Saturday morning at the age of 49. Catchphrases made famous by Stuart Scott, you may have become familiar with over the years. He must be the bus driver because he was taking him to school. We all remember that one. He was as cool as the other side of the pillow. And his signature catchphrase, booyah. But among the features of the new ESPN studio in Bristol is the wall. Wall of catchphrases made famous by the on-air talent over the years. And nine of them belong to Stuart Scott. And Stuart passed away at the age of 49 of cancer. His contributions to the sport lexicon are writ large, but they are only one aspect of his legacy. When he passed away, he left behind so much more. He inspired his colleagues with his sheer talent, his work ethic, and his devotion to his family. He defied convention and criticism to help bring the ESPN network into a new century. He spoke to the very athletes he was talking about with a flair and style that ESPN president John Skipper said changed everything. He was remembered through an outpouring of tributes by athletes, colleagues, and fans on Twitter and statements from his alma mater, the University of North Carolina, which said that his legacy will live on in many ways as a friend, a son, a father, and a professional, and forever a Tar Heel. Moments of silence were held at some sporting events Sunday, including the NFL wild card games between the Cincinnati Bengals, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Detroit Lions versus the Dallas Cowboys. Scott saved his best for his last year on the air at the ESPYs on July 16th, shortly before his 49th birthday and following another round of cancer surgery. Stuart accepted the Jimmy V Award for perseverance and with strength, humor, grace, and these eloquent words. When you die, it does not mean that you lose to cancer. You beat cancer by how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live. So while the grief is deep at ESPN over the death of Stuart Scott, so is the gratitude. He was as popular on the ESPN campus as he was in the airports he passed through and on the sidelines he worked over the last 22 years. He brought so much to the party, and he will continue to do so through the people he inspired and the language that he liberated in the audience that will remember him. Stuart was born in Chicago, but he, along with two sisters and a brother, spent his formative years in North Carolina, where his father was a postal inspector who always had time to play after work. His career path took him from Florence to Raleigh, North Carolina, to Orlando. In his pre-ESPN clips, you can feel his energy and hear his music and sense his on-camera charisma. Stuart Scott of ESPN, dead at age 49. His impact on broadcasting will last forever. Well, that just about does it for me for tonight. I'd like to thank you for joining me tonight. Thank my guests, Amy Purdy and Southside Johnny Lyon. Once again, you for joining us. I'll be back with you on Sunday evening, January 25th. To them, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.